Of what might happen to you as a result of making these revelations?
Oh, yes. I probably am a dead man already.
They think they're living in a police state.
Once upon a time, there were these people in Europe called pilgrims, and they were afraid of being persecuted. So they all got in a boat and sailed to the New World where they wouldn't have to be scared ever again.
I loves my gun, loves my gun.
And I don't mean no money, like I work at Walmart and make no money.
So enjoy yourself, or I'll come looking for you. There and veg out in front of your TV and enjoy what these fine people are giving you, which is maximum entertainment. You understand what I'm saying about? And don't you ever, ever, ever forget what it's like without TV. Because before TV, people just sat and played with themselves all night.
I loves my gun. Loves my gun.
Recorded February 16th, 2012. This is Episode 3, Beat the Heat. Of Rangers A to Z. That's R4NGER 5. A as in America, the number 2, letter 2, I don't care, whichever way you want to do it. And Z for either Z or 0, depending on where you live. Our website is r4nger5.com. Lots of stuff there. If you want to stop in there and see if you can find some of the back issues of this show, you certainly are welcome to. We've got a number of other free media projects up there. Rangers Radio, Rangers Oz, Rangers Bravo. There are several video projects up there. I don't remember off the top of my head if there's a link to Storm the Wire. If not, well worth looking up on YouTube, done by one of our guys. You can also see V doing some wild camping there. There's a few combat shorts up. The one of V getting his hair cut for some reason seems to be real popular, so maybe you go watch that too and add to those numbers and laugh at V getting his dreadlocks shaved off or something. I'm your host, Iron Angel, for this show, and this show is Beat the Heat. In the last episode, we covered snow. We covered being trapped in a blizzard, that kind of stuff. Now we're going to go the other direction. Basic tips for everyday survival in some sort of warmer environments. And I'm not saying, you know, deep, oh, I'm going surviving kind of stuff. You know, we're not talking about that kind of thing. Just basic everyday stuff. Everyday solutions. Practical solutions for impractical problems for impractical problems. You know, it's basically just about being comfortable, about surviving all the little annoyances of every day, and maybe having some fun, having a laugh at yourself in the process. Now, Beat the Heat comes out of my time living in Texas and Arizona. I had a lot of direct interaction with people who have been doing this much longer than I've been alive and are really good at it and know a lot of tricks. Obviously, if you're really gung-ho to go deep camping out in the desert, pick up things like Desert Survival Guides, the SAS Survival Guide, things like that. They'll give you a lot of information that I'm not going to cover here. This is the basic stuff, assuming that you're not really going deep into the bush. You're just kind of out there, and maybe you hit a rock and your tire went flat, and now you're stuck in the desert on your way to wherever you were going. Now, it's almost guaranteed I'm going to miss stuff, and there'll be a second episode. I already realized I missed a bunch of stuff in Snow Crash, our second episode of Rangers America. I went back in the midst of putting this show together and did a second episode of that, so they were actually done slightly out of sequence. Episode 2 and 4 were completed back-to-back, with Episode 3 about half done in between. I got the background music and stuff in place, I got the songs chosen for this track, and went, oh, geez, I forgot stuff! And I can almost assure you I'm going to do that exact same thing again, so in a future episode we'll probably have a whole bunch more stuff that I didn't cover that I should have. As before, we're going to start with your car. More often than not, people are going to get in this environment in their car. Let's say you're from Boston or somewhere up north, New York, and you're heading out to see your cousin in California. somewhere out in the middle of Nevada, your car decides, you know what, I'm not going any further. If you prepared ahead of time, this is just going to be an annoyance more than anything else. There's a pretty good chance you're going to be in an area that doesn't have cell signal. So you're going to have to rely on yourself a bit more than you might in that kind of environment, as opposed to, say, a snow environment where you might actually have some decent cell signal. The first and foremost thing is water. Above everything else, water. If you're going into a warm environment, be it dry or wet warm, does not matter, you're going to need water. As the temperature rises, your need for water goes up, especially if you're not really acclimatized to it and in shape for it. Water is heavy, so trying to carry water on your person is not going to be easy. You're really going to need a gallon of water for every 8 hours in the heat. You really should have, especially if you're in the desert, you really should have 5 to 8 gallons of potable human consumable water with you, and a bit more that you're a little less sure about, maybe for the car, just in case. If you're out there a lot, you want to change your water out frequently, 2-liter soda bottles or something like that. Change them out every couple of weeks, because if they sit in the sun, one, they're going to absorb some flavor and possibly chemicals out of the plastic, and two, you know, it just tastes nasty after a while. If you've got some kind of meh flavored water, shake it. Sometimes that nasty flavor is just the water has lost aeration. We're used to having oxygenated water. Our bodies prefer it that way. It's pretty simple. Shake it up, see what that does for it. And once you've got your water put away, obviously, again, you're going to want some food. Again, it's high-carb food because you're in a stress environment. Crackers, trail mix, Chex mix, that kind of stuff. Salty may or may not be good here. Depends on how acclimatized you are. Salt makes you thirstier, so it's going to make you drink more. You can get basically overhydrated to a point that you make yourself sick and throw up. And in this environment, that's not good. Say it's, you know, 115 degrees Fahrenheit. You don't want to be out there puking. One, it's no fun to begin with. And two, it's really going to put you in a lot more stress than you need to be in. So, consider your snacks a little more carefully there than in a cold environment. The thing is, the desert, particularly at night, also gets cold. I was out there in Phoenix. We were up in Globe. We were up in the mountains. And it went from 91 or 92 degrees midday down to 26 degrees that night. So we had to have a lot more equipment with us than if we were just in one given environment, because it did actually get below freezing. And, you know, we were camping in tents and stuff. It wasn't bad, but we were aware going in what we could be getting into. Now, granted, we were at, I think we were about 2,100 feet where we were camped at, something like that. The whole area rises fairly high. You know, they call it the high desert, which is something of a misnomer. It's about 1,000 feet roughly above sea level on average. So you're not, you know, it's not like you're in Denver or something, but you still need to acclimatize to where you're at. If you're up say, in Flagstaff, Flagstaff, Arizona is about 7,000 feet. So at night, it gets pretty darn cold out there. There's a number of places around the country that can do that, can go from very high temperature to very low temperature in less than 6 hours. And exposure to either of those is not good for you. So let's assume you've got your water squared away, you've got it in your vehicle somewhere, you've got your basic emergency kit, which includes a hat and gloves just in case. And there's a few more things you're going to want in the kit out in the desert you don't necessarily want up north. The first one is shade. Even a bed sheet will give you a great deal of shade. A large plastic tarp will help. A big chunk of just cloth, you know, go to the fabric store and get a light-colored piece. Not necessarily white. The dye in cloth actually prevents the ultraviolet and infrared from getting through. I don't know 100% accurately how much I believe this, but I've been told that orange dye, for whatever reason, is the best color to reflect and prevent heat from getting to the surface underneath of it. I do know that the Bedouins tend to favor dark brown. They use a dark brown wool for some of their clothes and tents and things like that. I have to believe there's a reason for that. It may just be what's available to them that works very well, as opposed to the white, that kind of thing. It may have significance that I don't understand, don't know. I'm ignorant to a lot of things. That's one of them. But I know that something that's got a dye in it and that's a natural fiber seems to help. 100% plastic tarp is not going to be quite as useful to you as a canvas tarp or a big piece of dye cloth. I would think denim would work pretty well, too. We haven't experimented with denim, so I can't say yay or nay there. But I can say that a big chunk of light-colored canvas, cream-colored canvas, worked very, very well. What we did when we were sitting alongside the road and kind of wondering, well, that was kind of a stupid thing, was we slammed the chunk of canvas in the top of the car door and then put a couple of good-sized rocks on the corners of the canvas and sat in the shade underneath of it against the side of the car. That kept the sun off from us. The air rising up the underside of that piece of white canvas caused a draft. And I it was a good-sized piece of canvas, probably, oh, good Lord, 16, 18 feet long by a good 8 feet wide. And so we had a pretty good area covered, and it allowed us a great deal of shelter. There were three of us up underneath there, sitting there laughing our butts off at being stupid. And I'm saying again, which I'm trying not to do, honest. We were out in the midday sun. We decided to wait for a couple of hours and take quick sojourns out to work on various stuff, getting our equipment out of the back of the car, that kind of stuff. We'd go out and get in the sun for 10, 15 minutes, then come back in the shade for half an hour and get cooled back down. In the shade, it was probably a good 30 degrees cooler than it was out in the sun. And in that environment, that fatigue that builds up very quickly in that heat drains your energy, and drains you in a way that even sleep doesn't always fix right away. Hydration and rest is what you really need. And the situation we were in, we had sufficient water, but it wasn't really the most comfortable place to try and sleep sitting against the car alongside the road. And of course, we were out in the middle of nowhere, so there was nobody else out there around us. And that's always the way this happens. You know, it wouldn't be an everyday emergency if you were sitting alongside the highway someplace. Somebody'd stop in and say, hey, you need to ride up to the next truck stop or something. And that's a whole other topic in itself. We'll cover that eventually. So if you've got some shade, you've got some water, you've got some food, you're well on your way. A real good thing to have in a high heat environment, especially when the sun is out, is sunglasses. Keep your eyes protected. If you're out in the desert, sand is a problem. If there's a sandstorm coming, get in a vehicle. If you can't get in a vehicle, lay face down in a ditch or something, cover yourself up. Obviously, you're going to want to move around and things like that to knock the sand off you so you don't get covered. It's rare to have a sandstorm in the U.S. drop a great deal of sand, but if you're listening to this someplace else in the world, you may very well know what we're talking about. I've got friends who have hiked across North Africa and told us, you know, stories of sandstorms that left 6 inches of sand overnight. And 6 inches of sand gets heavy quick. Their tent didn't fare real well. They were just using a standard little dome tent. It didn't like that a whole lot. And the sand can be very destructive. If it gets up into your eyes and nose and throat and things like that, it can be very destructive. The sand is very sharp and flinty and can tear you up pretty bad. So another thing to have is a light piece of cloth that you can wet slightly and put across your nose and mouth to keep the sand and dust out if you're in that kind of environment. A lot of people in dry environments use evaporative cooling. They will put water on something that they wear close to their skin, and as it evaporates, it carries heat away. In a dry environment, it works great. In a damp environment, it sucks. It sucks, dude. So we'll cover the wet environments after a little bit. For now, we're going to assume dry desert stuff. We're assuming that you're on your way to Vegas and something has gone heinously awry. Or maybe you're going to Burning Man and the wheel fell off your giant metal elephant. You know, what have you. If you decide you have to walk for help or to get cell signal or what have you, wait until evening. Not full night. Wait until, say, 5 in the afternoon, 6 in the afternoon. Generally speaking, the day is hottest a few hours past high noon, when it's had the most time to heat everything up, and then it starts to cool back down again. Head out, basically hold your arm out, facing the horizon, facing where the sun is. Every hand span at your arm's full distance from the horizon upward is 1 hour of time you have before the sun sets. This is relatively universal. You basically hold your hand out with either your palm facing you or your palm away, and you measure across your knuckles. And you can start stacking your hands up and get an idea how many hours of sunlight you have left. If at all possible, you want to be back at your vehicle, if that's where you're headed, before dark. Simply because otherwise it starts to get cold very quickly, and that's fairly miserable. And you don't really want to be out amongst the night critters and stuff, because there's a lot of things that live in the desert that are not necessarily friendly at night. If you're from some place that doesn't have this sort of flora and fauna, let me warn you about a few things. Anything green probably is not a good thing to touch. In the deep desert, anything green is more than likely a cactus. There are some grasses in some areas, there are some other plants in some areas, but on the average, if you don't know any better, assume if it's green, it's pokey. Now, cactus thorns won't really hurt you. You're not going to die from a single cactus thorn prick, more than likely. But they are annoying, and they're hard to get off. They've got little barbs, and they'll get in your skin or on your clothes and that kind of stuff. There might have been some drinking involved with some friends. We were out at Estrella Mountain Park just outside of Phoenix, Arizona, and we decided to try and sled down Estrella Mountain on an aluminum street sign. Now, mind you, there was no snow on the ground. It was about 70. It was also about 3 o'clock in the morning. That particular day was nice and warm. It wasn't too bad at all. And, we just didn't know any better, so we decided it was later. It was close to dawn. There might have been just a little bit of drinking involved of the adult beverage variety. And I think it started with, watch, I'll make a gravel angel, and just went downhill from there. And, let me tell you, gravel angels are okay in driveway gravel. They suck in the desert. Desert rocks tend to be a little sharper. The wind sweeping over them, the sandstorms and stuff like that. Desert stuff tends to be kind of flinty and edgy and not a whole lot of fun to land on either. Thundering down the hill, and I crash into a teddy bear cactus, which if you know what they are, you'll be laughing at me now. Climbed out of the cactus and attempted to pick all the little things off, and it's a lot like watching a cat that stepped on a piece of tape. Pretty much the same thing. And my friends, of course, weren't really helping as much as they were falling down laughing, so that's kind of something to be aware of. In a lot of the Old West movies, you'll see breaking a cactus open and squeezing the water out and that kind of thing. Yeah, you can do it if you know the right kind of cactus to do it with. But let me tell you right up front, the water inside of cactuses, you have to do a lot of screwing around with, and it tastes nasty. You're much better off carrying your own water with you. Wear loose clothes that are away from your body. The desert people figured this out a long time ago. Learn from their wisdom. Those long, flowing, loose robes, those aren't so much a fashion statement as they are very practical garments in that environment. If you have the option to do so, something like a poncho or a bed sheet with a hole ripped in it or something like that, just to keep the heat away from you, just to keep the sun off from you, will help. You'll also notice the Bedouins wear a turban or something like that. If you're going to be in that environment, learn how to tie one. It's really simple. It's a foot wide by 12 foot long chunk of cloth. It's basically a giant sash. And having one wrapped around you if you're going to be out camping and hiking and stuff isn't half bad. Gives you some place to carry stuff. Comes in handy if you twist an ankle or something, you can wrap up with it. You can put it across your face and wet it if you happen to get into a sandstorm sort of situation. And if you need to wear it as a turban to keep the sun and heat off of you, it works really well. I was absolutely surprised. A couple of friends of mine have been deployed over into Afghanistan and Iraq, and they pretty much adopted some of the local customs because you just didn't have any options. The sandstorms there were really, really brutal, and you needed something across your mouth and nose to keep the sand out, and they were wearing goggles to keep their eyes from being damaged. And they said, yeah, the sand in your hair is just awful. They would take what they call a schmegma, which is just a big 6-foot square bandana, and they'd wrap it up across their throat and over the top of their head and tie it off so that they had their head wrapped. And it helps a great deal. Even though it seems kind of counterintuitive, it seems like it would hold in your body heat. Your body heat is only 98.6 or so degrees. If it's 115 or 120 degrees out, these are, of course, Fahrenheit. You Celsius folks have to translate, sorry. If it's 120 out, your body temperature is substantially lower than the air temperature. So instead of you shedding body heat, you're actually absorbing heat, and probably quite a bit of heat because of the sun, too. At the very least, you want a very wide-brimmed hat, like a boonie hat or something like that, because that'll keep the sun off your shoulders and off your face, because sunburn just sucks. It's never fun to be, you know, peeling like a lobster or looking like a lobster and peeling like a snake all at once, you know, just not fun. So keep a large-brimmed hat in your car with you. Sunglasses are not a bad idea. Water, food, all those kinds of things. Let's see. There's some other stuff I'm sure I'm missing here, and I just can't remember it off the top of my head. Basically, all the same stuff kind of applies for the wet environment, the large-brimmed hat, the sunglasses, all that kind of stuff. The wet heat is a different game. And in some ways, it's more fatiguing than dry heat. The dry heat, you can feel your eyeballs dry out. In a wet heat, you can feel parts of your body sweat that were never intended to. In a wet heat, if possible, you want to try and get some of the moisture off your body. A towel, you know, carrying a towel and wiping off sweat's not a half-bad idea. That will help some. I don't have a huge amount of experience in wet heat. We get, you know, a few days a year up here in the North Country that's up into the 90s, and the people down south just laugh at us because, 90. Yeah, well, come on up here when it's 14 degrees and 40 inches of snow, and we'll talk. And I'm just teasing. You know, everybody has to go through what they live in. You know, every environment has its unique proclivities. There's a few places like San Diego that only have one season per se, but, you know, on the whole, most areas have some variance. Let's see. If you're in a wet heat, there's obviously, you still got to remain hydrated. We always joked, if you don't have to pee, you're not drinking enough. And that's really not inaccurate. Even when it's a wet heat, I did spend some time in Mississippi, Alabama, New Orleans, places like that. Granted, I wasn't drinking water in New Orleans like I should be. Should you be drinking adult beverages? And you probably will be if you're one of my friends. Every time you have an adult beverage, an equal volume of water, or if you're drinking shots, an 8-ounce glass of water. One, you'll have way less of a hangover the next day. Even if you say, oh, I don't get hangovers. Well, you know what? You're still going to be better off for it. And this goes for any environment. You know, don't necessarily drink alcohol when it's cold out because you think it makes you warm. It doesn't. It makes you shed body heat. But when it's hot out, alcohol and things with caffeine in them are diuretics. They cause you to lose water from your system, both of which are a huge issue. You can be dehydrated and not know it. A lot of times people think they're hungry and they're actually dehydrated. So, you know, whenever you feel hungry, try a glass of water first. See what that does. If the hunger goes away, you were actually thirsty and didn't know it. Let's see. I don't have enough information about wet heat. This is something I'm going to have to educate myself about, and I'll come back down the road several episodes and get you some more information. I'll have to talk to a few of my friends that live down in the deep south, you know, down around Atlanta and places like that, Mississippi, and see what sorts of horrible tips they have, because I'm sure there's some stuff I'm missing here. Like anything else, if there's a topic you want to know about and don't know anything about, sit down in front of your favorite search engine and type in, how do I? And in this case, it's how do I live comfortably in high temperatures? Or how do I beat the humidity? And see what your search engine spits out for you. Use other people's wisdom. Use other people's experiences, because those things will come in handy for you. So I think for right now, that's about going to cover it. When we come back, I'll cover dealing with your house some, something I probably forgot here, I'll throw in there. It's always the way it works out. Like I said, there's more than likely going to be another episode of this one. So, you know. This whole thing is about practical solutions for impractical problems, dealing with day-to-day discomforts. And this one's just beating the heat. So, in an effort to beat the heat, I'm going to throw in a couple of cool audio tracks. This is an all-instrumental audio track show. We're not going to have any vocals in either of these audio tracks. The first one is Chain Monkey. You can find him on alonetone.com. This is Theme. It doesn't have any other name beyond that. It's just Theme 2, ... and the second track is Poesis, Moonlight on Sand, which really kind of feels like a very fitting track for what we're doing here. Hopefully you'll enjoy these when we go to the music here. Stay cool. You know, obviously, when we first air this, it's going to be in the middle of winter, but hopefully you'll absorb this. Burn it CD, pass it out to friends, keep it in your car if you're heading into the desert. Hopefully we'll come across something useful for you. And on into some music, eh? I want to thank our musical contributors this episode. That first piece was Chain Monkey, theme from. You can find that on lonetone.com under Chain Monkey. He's part of The Culprits, which I'm sure you'll hear in a future show. Great band out of the UK. Really like their stuff. I'm real thankful for being allowed to use that. The second track was Poesis, Moonlight on Sand. I'm going to close with another track of his, which is Stand Back, I'm Going to Try Science, a reference to XKCD. Both of those should be available on his site, which I believe is poesis.net. Dump P-O. I'm sorry, that might not be spelled right. Hang on, let me look. P-O-I-E-S-I-S. Into your favorite search engine and see what you find. He's got quite a few different albums out. I don't know which ones are up currently. He rotates which ones are available at any given time. I believe his whole catalog is available somewhere, but I can't remember where he's got it up. You might look on Alone Tone, you might look on SoundCloud, you might look on Bandcamp. Thanks again, guys, for letting us use your stuff. I want to thank you, the listener, for taking the time to stop in and listen. And let's get back to what we were doing. This is episode 3 of Rangers America A to Z, Beat the Heat. In the earlier parts, I rambled on a fair amount about having to deal with heat when you're out in your vehicle. Traveling through the desert, breaking down, however you ended up being there, you ended up being there. Now we're going to cover your house. Everybody's got to live somewhere. Some people live where it's hot. And the people that live there, you know, if you're like someone like me moving from up north down south, go with the information the local people give you. My first experience in the deep desert was, because I'm an idiot, it was July 3rd. And I took a Greyhound bus to Phoenix, Arizona, where I met a friend. And we were getting ready to come back to Michigan. And got picked up at the bus station. Within 20 minutes, I had leaned on a gas pump that had been in the hot sun all day. It was 109 degrees when I got off the bus. Needless to say, I was not really ready for that. I went out, leaned on the gas pump, immediately got a first-degree burn off the top of the gas pump, and went, oh, don't touch metal. So let's start there. In the sun, you know, the solar heat really does heat things up quickly. Anybody who's lived there for any length of time knows better to do that. Us Yankees ain't that bright about it. And the darker the piece is, the better chance it has of being hot. The gas pump I got burned on was actually chrome. So it was nice and shiny. You would think it would reflect a lot of the heat, but the infrared still penetrates it and still heats it up. Had that pump been painted black, I'd have gotten possibly even second degree burns. You know, because I just slapped my arm right on there and put some weight on it, which was, you know, really a bright thing to do. But you'll come across old cars out in the desert and things like that that have been sandblasted down, and you know, you look at them and they're very visually interesting. You think, oh, I'll just lean on that and we'll get a picture, and then you got burned on the butt and have to explain that one. Should you get burned by something, a contact burn like that, the first thing you need to do is get the heat out of the burn. A wet cloth is not a bad choice. Just dip it in your cooler or what have you, or pour a little bit of water on it and put that on there, because liquid will help pull heat out quicker. You want to cool it down, keep it wrapped but loosely so it can breathe, and hopefully try and keep it from getting burned again and keep it out of the sun. A better solution really is just not to get burned in the first place. Try and keep bare skin from contacting any kind of metal. Metal tends to transfer heat faster than anything else because it's got a relatively smooth surface. Quite a lot of rocks actually don't transfer heat all that well. The more porous the surface is, the less heat they transfer. In case you didn't know this, this is how firewalking is done. There's usually a lot of big porous rocks mixed in with the coals. Coals themselves won't transfer heat immediately when you step on them or even pick them up. This isn't saying you should reach into a campfire and grab a coal. It can be done if you know what you're doing. Get somebody who knows what they're doing to show you this kind of stuff if you want to go walk on fire. But this is how it's done. It's not some sort of mysticism thing. It's not some sort of special, you know, mystical trick or anything like that. It's basic physics, basic science. But yeah, it's still pretty cool. Now, that said, that doesn't mean you should go barefoot out in the desert and see what you can walk on. That's really not the way to do things, because there's a lot of stuff crawling around the desert you don't necessarily want to play with. You know, even if you live there, there's still things like scorpions you got to be aware of. Rattlesnakes in some areas. There's all kinds of horrible things. Stepping on a cactus has kind of made us suck, too. So try and avoid that if at all possible. Anytime we went out hiking in the desert, we always made sure we were wearing good long pants, good solid boots, that kind of stuff. Because stepping on a sharp stick or a rattlesnake or something like that, never a good time. And that's way more adventure than this series is intended to cover. If you live in that environment, you probably know a lot more about this than I can tell you. If you don't live in that environment, find somebody who does to teach you. Native guide is a good thing to have no matter where you are. If you go into a new environment, something very different than you're used to, you know, I grew up in the woodlands. I'm very comfortable in the woods almost anywhere. But if I get down south, I still want somebody local with me to go, oh, by the way, that's a water moccasin. Don't eat that. You know, that kind of thing. Oh, look, that's not a log. That's a gator. You don't want to try and ride that. Well, yes, I do, but that's me. I'm not a role model for your life. But basically your house, some of this stuff actually works for us northern folk, too. One, insulation keeps heat out just as well as it keeps heat in. So having your house well insulated is not a bad choice. It makes it cheaper to heat and cool. It makes it more comfortable on the whole. It keeps the interior temperature a lot more even. Two, keeping out the solar radiation in the summer helps a lot. To some extent, we're aided because the sun angle changes. It's coming down at a steeper angle, so it doesn't come in quite as much into the house. But if you can put awnings over your windows, that helps a great deal. If you live up north, removable awnings are not a bad idea. Even canvas works fine, although they can get ripped up by high winds. If you've got a big windstorm coming, you'll want to roll them back against the house and tie them up good. You'll see a lot of areas have a permanent awning built in. During the summer, the awning stops the sun from coming in. The awning doesn't project very far, a couple of feet maximum. It keeps the sun out in the summer, and yet in the winter, when the sun's at a lower angle, the sun can come into the house and warm the house. As we said, even in the summer, it can get cold in the desert at night. In the wetter environments, the water in the air and in the ground helps hold the heat, so you've got less issue with that. And in the cities, the concrete holds the heat a long time. For example, Phoenix, again, another good place for examples here. The city of Phoenix downtown has a tendency to stay warm all night. It can stay up into the 90s all night when the desert drops down into the 40s, because the thermal mass of the concrete absorbing the sun's heat all day radiates back out overnight. And there's a few things about Phoenix that struck me as very strange. A lot of people's yards were sunken, and they would flood them by night. It was the only way to really effectively irrigate them. The problem was, come morning, the sun would pop up over the hill. All that water would turn to water vapor, would go up and hit the inversion layer that was hanging over the thermal mass of the city, and slide down to the far end over Scottsdale and Tempe, and just make life suck down there. Plus, there's a lot of people running swamp coolers, evaporative cooling systems that used water vapor being sprayed into the air to pull heat out. In a very dry environment, they work great. If you live in Mississippi or Florida, not a chance, buddy. Once the humidity gets above, say, 50%, they stop working very effectively. You'll still see a lot of people using misters on their patio, and they still work pretty good in that environment, but it doesn't work for a whole house system. Generally speaking, when it gets really hot, it's a great time to go for a swim. Water is very effective at transferring temperature out of and into your body. So if you're in 90 degree heat and go jump in a 70 degree lake, it feels great. I will say jumping out of a 90 degree temperature into a spring fed river that's only 55 degrees was a little excitement. I wasn't quite ready for it. It causes shrinkage and other things. And that's a whole other story that's you know, not really PG-13, so we'll skip that. But you can imagine there's a bunch of you sitting out there laughing at me right now. I know it. Don't worry. It's okay. That's all right. It's all good. My stupidity is your gain. We've seen cases where there was one year we were camping in Pennsylvania in August, and it was just thick. It was 104 in the shade, just miserable. And we all kind of stood around and looked at each other and went, you know what, this is kind of dumb. we're not going to go out and run around the hills and stuff like that today. This is too hot. What we're going to do, and you can do this at home, we got out a big plastic tub. We filled it with water, probably, 30, 40 gallons of water, and sat in it like a Roman bath. And I'll tell you what, that was a real heat beater. We were outside, there was a nice breeze. Everybody walked by laughing at us because there's, four or five of us sitting around a half circle underneath our little shade pavilion in our Roman bath, our low-rent Roman bath. And the next day, there were probably 15 or other or 20 other tubs we could see from our line of view. And a couple days later, when it was still miserably hot, the local big box stores had sold out of the giant plastic tubs because everybody went, you know what, that's kind of a good idea. We're going to do that. So, when you're out roughing it and stuff, that'll work. If you live in a house without air conditioning, yeah, it looks dumb. You look stupid. Stupid. Sitting in a big tub full of water. But you know what? You're not miserable. Sitting there eating your ice cream bar, drinking your beverage. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You look like a moron, but you know what? You look like a comfortable moron. So, hey, if it works, run it. Plus, you can use that big plastic tub for other stuff too. That's a great place to store things in the off season. Put all your summer stuff in there for winter, and put it up in the garage, and off you go. Any kind of thing that you've got like this that serves multiple purposes is better. Be it cold temperature equipment, be it hot temperature equipment. A tarp is a fantastic thing to have. You can put it up in your backyard. Get a nice heavy tarp with grommets around the edges, some poles, some clothesline, a few tent stakes. You prop that sucker up in the backyard, and you go out there and sit in lawn chairs when it's 95 degrees out, and you're in the shade, and it's nice. So yeah, let's see other heat-beating tricks. Everybody loves ice cream. Depends on if you're lactose intolerant, of course, and if you're vegan, that kind of stuff. But if you're not, you can certainly go that route. Shaved ice. We did a lot of stuff with shaved ice. You crush up ice and mix it together with fruit. Fruit and yogurt, I think it was, we were mixing together. Kind of looked a little scary, but went down good. Was really nice on a hot day. There was a couple of weird summer drink sodas we used to mix up. Something fizzy, a clear soda, fizzy clear soda, like say 7-Up or something like that. Something like Squirt or some other citrus flavored soda, and orange juice in equal parts. Real nice afternoon drink over ice. And I'm sure you've got your favorite heat beater. Obviously, you're still going to want to mix water because soda's got caffeine in it, most sodas have caffeine in it, which is a diuretic. It's going to cause you to have to wee a lot. And just because you're going to the bathroom a lot doesn't necessarily mean you have enough fluid in your system. So keep alternating with water. Water, 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 water. Can't drink enough of it. Let's see. In the summer, there's actually dietary changes from summer to winter. We discovered that a lot of the foods from hot places tended to be really good summer food. When we were getting the high temperatures, we have a tendency to go over to Mediterranean-style foods and Italian-style foods. The southern end of Italy gets pretty good and warm during the summer, so Mediterranean-Italian foods, when it hits about 90 degrees is gyro time. It's just something about, that tzatziki sauce, that cucumber-based sauce is just, it's fantastic when it's really hot out. A lot of people want to grill burgers and hot dogs and stuff. Those are great up to a certain temperature. From, say, 70 up to 85 or 90, they're pretty good. But, after you hit about 95 or so, your stomach goes, oh, dude, that's coming back. You keep putting that down here. That's why a lot of people eat this stuff and don't even realize they're doing it. Potato salad, macaroni salad, Jell-O. If you're not a vegan, you can eat Jell-O. Although I'm not sure modern gelatin isn't made out of some sort of weird chemical. Who knows these days? Anymore, it's getting to a point where everything's made out of some kind of weird chemical. So there's kind of a summer food and there's a seasonal food thing you need to get into too. Obviously, keeping the stuff in the house is going to help you out quite a bit. Mix up a big old bowl of potato salad and macaroni salad. Keep them in the fridge. Spoon them out. hey, it's, you know, great food to sit on the deck and when it's nice and hot and just enjoy it. When it's hot like that, take more breaks. Your boss is not going to be happy about this, but you know what? He's hot and miserable too. Point out to him that you're going to get a whole lot more done if you take more breaks than if you're in the hospital for heat exhaustion or heat stroke. Both of these are serious medical conditions. I'm not going to give you advice on those here. I am going to recommend you look them up. Something a bit more in-depth than, say, WebMD. WebMD is a start, not to, you know, specifically name a brand, but just go to your favorite search engine and type in, how do I identify heat stroke? How do I identify heat exhaustion? Knowing those two things is really useful. Even if you live someplace up north, a lot more people die up north in the heat than they do down south. People down south are like, ooh, it's getting hot. I need to not do this anymore. You know, I need to not push this much anymore. Obviously, going out and mowing the lawn with a push-type lawnmower in the heat of the day really isn't the best bet. One, it tends to trap a lot more greenhouse gases and stuff underneath the heat inversion layer. In some areas, actually have ozone action days where you're not supposed to fill up your car, you're not supposed to run lawnmowers, that kind of stuff, on those days because of that. And it's just not really good for you because you're out in the heat, you're getting a lot of sun. Sunblock is certainly a worthy thing to discuss. It's well worth using. The thing is, sunblock clogs your pores. A lot of sunblocks make it harder for you to sweat, so it's harder for you to stay cool. Sweating is how your body stays cool. If you can instead use loose clothes, preferably, again, like we talked about before, with dyes in them, something that will keep the sun from getting to you, keep the infrared from getting to you. You know, the Hawaiian shirts might be kind of visually dazzling and somewhat painful on the eye, but they actually are done that way for a reason. One, they're camouflage for that area. If you happen to see somebody in a Hawaiian shirt standing in front of some of the local foliage and bloom, it blends in pretty good. But two, that bright color pattern helps to diffuse the heat coming on them quite a bit. And Hawaiian shirts are always loose, and that helps keep you cool. Obviously, real tight pants, you know, I'll tell you what, back in the 80s, we were in heavy rock bands, and leather pants were the way to go, right up until it got about 95 degrees out, and then leather pants sucked a lot. But we had to prove we were tough, so we kept wearing leather pants. And, you know, we were also the same morons that only wore a t-shirt in winter, you know, to prove how tough we were, and then, you know, wondered why it was we were getting frostbite on our nipples and stuff. You know, we're young, we're dumb. That's why kids are resilient, because they're dumb. Once they start learning, they get older, they're like, you know what, this is dumb, I'm not doing this anymore. Yeah, if you're young and you're into that, okay, cool, do what you gotta do, man. But at the same time, hey, if you can learn now, you'll have a much happier, much, much more fun life. You know, we used to be really bad for wearing leather jackets and leather pants in summer because it looked cool. And yeah, it looked cool, except for anybody who wasn't us looked at us and went, wow, look at those morons. They're going to catch fire. I'm really pale. And if I go to the beach and take off my shirt, everybody runs over and uses me as the tan comparison guy. If you happen to be one of those kind of people that are the tan comparison guy, you know, they run up to you and go, hey, look how tan I am compared to this guy. You probably shouldn't be exposing your body to the sun a whole lot in very short exposures to keep from getting burned. You don't have a whole lot of melatonin in your skin if you're real light-skinned. That can be bad. What a suntan is your body going, huh, this guy's not smart enough to stay out of the sun. I'd better do something about that. And so it puts a pigment in your skin that converts that heat or that light into heat, that infrared into heat, which it sheds back off through your skin. Now, if you're really tan and you're out in the sun, or if you're African-American and you're out in the sun or something like that, or if you're an Indian and you're out in the sun, you can still get sunburn. You can still get a heat exhaustion or something like that from it. Your skin is converting all that infrared energy into heat as opposed to just, you know, burning you to a crisp. But you're now dealing with more surface heat to get rid of. Again, loose clothes helps a lot. If you look at the folks that live down around the equator, look at their clothing. It tends to be very loose, tends to be very airy. It's natural fibers. Natural fibers breathe, synthetic fibers don't. You know, I know you're just itching to get out that polyester leisure suit from the 70s. I know that lime green looks really good on you. Save it for nighttime when it's not so hot. And yes, I'm making a joke there. I warned you a show ago there were going to be bad jokes. That's going to happen. Sorry. There's a bunch of different ways that you can dress. So find something that works for you. Some people don't really want to have the giant hat. Some people find it really kind of classy. You know, they like the whole the I'm going on safari look. And finding a good safari hat's kind of difficult. But you know, some people will carry a parasol. You know, a sun umbrella. Some won't. Depends wildly. I have honest to goodness, no joke, seen a tough as nails tattooed biker with a sun umbrella. The guy's not a moron, you know, and are you going to make fun of him? I'm certainly not going to. And, you know, it was a good solution for an impractical time. So very practical of him, a very good way of doing things. He was following the Ranger's motto. Our Ranger's motto is survival of the smartest. I'm saying a whole lot in this show because I don't have notes. This is going from basically mental notes I prepared. I usually make up show notes ahead of time. This time I end up going through and just, you know, hitting record and seeing what happens. And then it's not really the best way to do things, is it? So, at any rate, thanks for listening. I know I've been about as exciting as a set of stereo instructions, read as a book on tape. Hopefully you can get something out of this. If you can't, hopefully somebody you know can. This podcast is free to share. Copy it. If you want to keep a copy in your car, if you're headed out in the desert, absolutely feel free. Stop at our site occasionally, check back, and see what I forgot in a later episode. And that's r4nger5.com, rangers.com. Actually, if you just go into any search engine and type in r4nger5, you'll find all kinds of media from us. Rangers America A to Z, that's this show. You'll find Rangers Radio, that's our main show. There's, as of this recording, almost 80 episodes available online for free. Rangers Oz being produced by Harlequin down in Australia. Rangers Bravo being produced also in the UK. Our main show, Rangers Radio, comes from the UK. Rangers America, I think Zeno Valance got that in the works. Not sure what else is going on. I think there's a couple other shows. Oh, there's the Storm the Wire podcast also. Well worth a listen. Covers a lot of good stuff. So at this point, we're going to close with another instrumental track. It's back to Poesis again. And this is his bonus track off his 2009 or 2010 album. And it's titled Stand Back, I'm Going to Try Science, for all you XKCD fans out there.